Okay, this is
all right. Call this meeting to order August 19th, 2025, Stansbury Park Improvement District. Our first of those in attendance, we have Jake Clegg, board member, Neil Smart, board member, Brett Palmer, park manager, general manager. We have Brendan Thorpe, our engineer, Tammy Thorpe, our record keeper. Jim Hanzelka is at our meeting as well, who is the manager of Stansbury Park Service Agency. We have our office staff, Christy and Marilyn, and I'm sorry, say your name again over here, Kellyanne. So, first item on here, we have Stansbury Service Agency, Jim Hanzelka, as a request to waive some late fees for our July invoices. Jim, we'll turn some talking points over to you and then we'll kind of talk about this for a minute.
Okay, so I don't know if you want me to go through all of those.
Probably not.
I don't know if everybody's aware, but this is the billing we get from you guys.
A couple pages.
72, I think it's 72 meters. We convert that to a spreadsheet so we can a little more manageable, and that's in your packet. What happened was in May, Kellyanne was on leave, and we were notified that even though we mailed the check on the 28th, evidently it didn't get to you guys in time, and so we incurred some late fees. We were discussing back and forth about were those really late fees, what was going on. In the interim, on June, we mailed the check on the 23rd and got hit for late fees in June on the July bill. I talked to Brett. He says, well, ask for a one-time removal of those late fees, and we did, and those were removed. But then in July, on the July billing, we got another set of late fees. We don't know if it was because in the translation they charged us late fees on the late fees or what was going on. We paid that billing on via ACH direct payment, which took some 2.5 hours to do because your system will only allow so many charges before it times us out, and then we got to go through the whole process to get back in again. So check is the preferred way to do it. What we'd like to do is just reset, wipe out the late fees that are existing, and then I'm going to have my staff walk a check over, deliver the check, get a receipt, so we've got a payment receipt for that date. Hopefully on or before the 28th, so we don't have this problem again. And then we have evidence that it was, because when we mail a check, we don't know when it gets to you. Mm-hmm. We're assuming if I mail it on the 23rd, it's coming in on the 24th, as long as it's not a holiday. But we don't really see that, and the only thing we see is when you guys deposit the check. In talking to other folks whose checks were also mailed on the 23rd, they all saw them before the end of that week, which would have been the 27th. So I don't know what went on in there, and we don't have any records, we don't have any documentation for that, but what we'd like to do is just wipe the slate clean and then we'll start over with a new process.
Okay.
So that's our request.
So just a 1 month waiver is what you're trying to get there?
Two months waiver? So the May was waived, we're looking for June and July.
Okay. And you're shaking head over here? What for?
We waived the July one because that one was asked to be waived. They weren't asked to waive any other fees, so there's $40 worth of fees that are still on the books that they have already paid it, so they are at a zero balance at this time.
Yeah, we'd like to reimburse for the late fees, is what we're saying.
So we have for the state parks.
So
yeah.
Jim? Yes.
Joe, are you sure you're lying?
Yeah.
It shows that you guys paid the 20, but then it shows that there's another late fee. So
but that late fee was from the previous month. It's not for the current billing cycle. So the current billing cycle will not reflect that.
So it has one that's due August 28th and the one that we do.
So all this on taxpayers, what comes right down to it?
That one was for the July billing cycle, so we reversed that late fee. So the late fees before that will still show on your billing that you still have a late fee incurred, but that's not incurred yet.
Right.
So when we received the email, the email asked us to do the one-time courtesy fee for the July, and that's what I reversed.
Which is about $2,000.
Yeah, it was $1,480.
$1,380 or $1,480?
$1,480.
So I have I want to ask a different question. Is there a way to simplify that stack of bills? There's no way to simplify that. There's no way to put that into an Excel sheet and send it as a simplified bill. That's it, our system, our software will do that.
That's not the way Excel works, because it prints the billing, the meter reads go to each account. And so it prints a bill for every individual account. You can't consolidate those into the system because it just records that one meter that's pulled in. So
that may be a pain for them, but at least it would let them know if they had a bad leak somewhere too, because it would be individualized.
I mean, we don't
it would be easier.
No, that's fine. I'm just curious.
We get these, like I said, we can.
I know that Express has a way to
chase it forever.
Consolidate and add a bunch of accounts to your account.
Like a base account.
So where you're not doing one individually after another, you can add multiple accounts to one account on Express Bill Pay.
Okay.
We have many customers that have their electrical bill or their gas bill or whatever that goes to Express, and they're all in one account.
No, and there's, that's not a problem.
Horizons looks the same way.
Does it?
Yeah, because they have a ton too.
So if you refer to the Outlook, I put a copy of the request in your form. What we requested was that they remove the late fees for May that were billed in June and deduct the late fees from the amount.
And that's fine. Ultimately, it doesn't really matter. We're just trying to get a couple months taken off.
Yeah.
How much legwork is it to do that?
Well,
it's a hassle, right?
It took me almost 2 hours to reverse all of those late fees last time.
So the question, I guess, is obviously we don't want to make a habit out of this kind of thing. How often have we ever had the kind of late fees from these guys before other than this little sequence?
Well, to be honest, we weren't. The system, because we had two different billing systems, we had quarterly and monthly. A lot of the times, the monthly people were never getting late fees because we were going off of quarterly billings.
I know that this past couple of months, I've been paying late fees at my house because my wife wasn't familiar with it as well.
So we've had, so for years, they probably should have gotten late fees and didn't. So essentially, I can't say that they didn't get any. I couldn't find any in any meeting minutes, and we delete our history
after 3 years. What the packet says. Yeah.
So I researched a lot and couldn't find anything, but
I'm ultimately just kind of looking at it and going, we're slapping the service agency on the hands here, but it really just hurts the community in the long run. It's we're taking $2,000 that could go towards fixing something somewhere, right, in the community. And so I don't care if you guys are like adamant, like, hey, this is 5 hours that it's going to take for us to fix something, but is it that's $4,000 that we can't put towards fixing something in the community. And so that's kind of how I look at it, but you just tell me, how do you want to handle it?
I feel that they're monthly. They've always been monthly. There's the due date. It has been put on bills that it's due on this date.
That's my opinion on it. They're willing to walk a check over here and make sure that it's going to be fine and going forward. If we have a late fee moving forward, we definitely go, hey, moving forward, we're not going to be on time. Let's not do this again. But it seems like.
Yeah.
You know, it hasn't been an issue really in the past, and maybe it has been, but it hasn't, not that we, it's never been
no,
brought up before.
We've never
right?
seen,
yeah.
because we weren't reflecting
so
it.
So, we've generally been hitting their due dates, correct?
I believe so. We can look back at our email records, but I mean, I believe so.
There's just so many needs as I looked around at the service agencies trying to take care of. It's a lot of sprinkler heads.
Yeah.
that we just are taking away, you know. So that's my opinion, but I obviously don't want, you know. What's that?
And SPID has needs too.
Sure, 100%.
We didn't waive the, out of the lineup, right, Brett? We were pretty out of it.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely isn't something I want to make a habit out of. I served on the service agency board, so I'd probably have a really good understanding of how far that money can go. So it would be my opinion that we, I mean, it's our happy medium, you know. But I also understand there's a lot of work that goes into it, so I'm not trying to cut that labor short by any, you know, stretch of the word, but.
Is there any way they can do a one-time credit to cover?
We did do the one-time courtesy already in reverse.
Right.
That's what we're doing with this.
So I've been holding, even the regular customers, we've been holding them accountable to that too. So we've had one person that's never been late for like 20 years, and he's like, what? I already used my late fee. Well, yes, you did. Show me on here. He wasn't too happy about it, but it is what's written in the policy, is one time late fee reversal. So, and even the ones when we moved from quarterly to monthly, I still only reversed one, even when they went a couple of months that we're still trying to figure it out. We still only waived one fee. So, I mean, but it's ultimately up to the board. I mean, it's just time for me. It will. So.
Jake, what's your gut tell you?
I don't know. I got, part of me says we already waived it once. That's where I'm hung up. Because they already went through the effort and waived it once. And then May. So we waived it in May and then it happened again in June and July.
Well, July was paid on the 28th of July. We just didn't pay the late fees because we were planning on meeting with the board. So July was paid on time, and then I made a second payment to cover all the late fees. We were told that we needed to pay.
And there was some confusion because we got a note back that said, and I put that message in there, said something about the late fees were due, were starting to calculate on the 28th.
Yeah.
On the 29th, which is when we paid them, but one of the staff read that as, well, if you pay it by the 29th, you're good. And that was, I guess, not the intent of the message, which was.
So the bills were paid on the 28th, the late fees were paid on the 29th. So the bills were paid on time, and the late fees were waiting for the reversal. Yeah. So we have payment up on the 28th, but there was late fees charged on the late fees.
Late fees.
Oh. On the late fees.
Yeah, we don't do we don't charge late fees on late fees.
Okay,
have,
so if we paid.
We have payment receipts. So, yeah. Payment
so if we paid an HCH bill on the 29th, and we on the 28th, and we were still charged late fees on the 29th, why is that?
No, we would not charge you a late fee.
We've got the people.
We have the thing right here. We just printed one. That's where I was kind of confused. It's in this packet. So this one shows that there's a late fee there.
Right.
And then it shows the previous balance of a late fee that was credited. So 60
right.
And 80.
This late fee was the one that was credited because you were already charged the late fee.
For July?
So it was, no. This is for your payment. So this billing is for your, this billing here, that's for your July, August payment, that was for July's billing. So that is showing that you got a late fee for your July billing.
So what?
So whenever your bill, your payment was posted, if you still had a balance on your account the next day, you got a late fee.
And then the balance was the late fees. We didn't pay the late fees. So we paid everything and subtracted the late fees from it, from June. That's what I'm saying. So we paid everything on the 28th minus the late fees because they kept adding on when we paid on your guys' system. And so that's why when we say there was late fees on late fees, we got subtracted evenly.
So you were not paying the full balance?
Yeah, we weren't paying the, well, just in the on the July one. And then the June one, by the time I paid it,
well, obviously we weren't paying it in the previous months either.
We were waiting to get the waiver. I was on maternity leave, so when I came back, that's when I was trying to look into it. So that's what the late fee was from July. So what you guys billed us was the meter reading, which is what I paid.
More PTO that you get.
Does that make sense? So if you were to look in your records, you would have gotten a payment for our accounts July 28th and then a
I'll bring out your.
Okay.
I'll bring out that. That's
not the way. So it sounds like.
Confusion reigns.
Always, always. Yeah. But it sounds like we waived the one in May.
Correct.
That one's been done. Everybody agrees on that one, right? That one was waived.
June, we sent the check on the 23rd. And.
And the check never got here.
It got here, got deposited July 1st. Other vendors have deposited them June 30th. That's hard. That's why we're like, you know, we're not going to mail checks anymore. We're going to fix it here. We'll just walk it.
Is there any postal date on that?
No, there's no postal.
Well, I haven't been able, I can just see when they cash on the bank account. We don't go certify it.
Fair enough.
But you would assume if you mail it on the 23rd in Tooele, it's going to get somewhere on the 24th or the 25th.
Yeah, it's just Salt Lake, it comes back.
Even that.
The mail's been horrible since COVID.
Yeah.
That's why I went all digital.
Yeah, well, we tried to go digital.
Okay. So then.
That's a lot of accounts to try to pay digital. Sure.
And it sounds like it times you out when you try to pay digitally. Is that right?
Yeah.
So then we're going to look and see, but it sounds like we're not supposed to charge late fees, or we don't charge late fees on late fees. Is that right, Marilyn?
I believe so.
She's going to go verify. She's going to go verify. But that's what that little debate was about. So if they paid in full, they don't have a late fee for July, really. We just have a late fee for June. Is that correct? Am I understanding that correctly?
But it sounds like if the late fees were left over as the balance not paid.
But if it's late fees and we're not billing.
If it's a separate balance as late fees, and it's in a separate category, then it shouldn't have been. But if it's still just part of the balance.
But then it just compounds. And
right.
My understanding is it's not supposed to do that. Right. So if it's not supposed to do that and it did that, I would say, we fix that, but they pay the June. We already waived May. If it's compounding again on late fees that were already paid, with the bill paid on time, then the only thing that they would have to pay is June.
And the question is, when did the check get here for June?
None of those are.
Well,
yeah, which nobody knows.
Sorry, I don't know the answer to that.
Which is why we're going to start paying the limit.
Understood.
No. There's enough confusion there that it just.
It's because of the balance on this side.
We need to send me all of the accounts
that verify
on
the accounts. Does that make sense
what you said? With each one.
Sure.
With each one, I send it.
If we are compounding on late fees, that's strange to me.
Right.
I don't enter payments.
I don't know that it is. I'm just saying. But if that's happening, but it sounds like there's some confusion there.
Late fees on the unpaid balance.
But if they paid their balance and the check was cashed, then there shouldn't be another hit.
It
shouldn't be.
They're going to have to answer those questions because I don't get into that detail. But I know that they check before they assess late fees, they go through every account and
check. So they have to check all 74.
Yeah, so this
is not a blanket statement, it's all the ones that are late.
This is the ones that we paid on the 29th, which was all the late fees that were on the account.
It should have brought us current on July 29th, it should have brought our entire account current. It hit all the late fees as a separate charge, I guess. Before that, she's going to go grab to see, because July 28th is when I came back from trying to leave, I brought us all back up to current, from my understanding, from your guys' online system. But if something was missing,
Sure, but it wouldn't be 1480. It would be one account or two accounts that got overlooked, right? You're not going to hit all 74 accounts. You're going to hit the one or two that were missed, right, Marilyn?
Right, and the payments, Jody has extra time. She always has. But payments aren't matching, and it's just a lot of extra time.
Extra.
Right, there's all of that going on as well for years. Just trying to.
It's a lot of accounts. It's just, I think it's crappy for both ends. There's nothing we can do about it. It's just a lot of accounts. That's why we ended up doing a check.
But it's not a blanket statement. And that makes sense. But it's not a blanket 1480. If you're late on one account, you're late on all accounts. You're late on that one, and you get $20 late fee on that one.
Through and see.
Whatever one has a balance.
So that's what we paid on the 29th.
That's fun.
So it's not one or two, it looks like it's every account.
But every account.
The 29th is late, right? 28th is the date.
I put it on the 29th.
But that's one you're talking about that was mailed on the 23rd.
Yes. This one is actually July payment. We did by ACH, and they said, oh, well, you didn't pay the late fees. So on the 29th, we went back and paid all of those late fees individually.
Pay 1 month.
At least.
And so Brock may have to be the deciding vote.
Okay.
So.
It's not ideal.
And that's fine. So here, so we got current, right?
I don't disagree with either side of it, but I just.
And I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying. It is taxpayers' dollars, but there's a lot of time with staff here on both sides trying to sort this out, trying to cut the baby down the middle.
But
I get it.
But not $2,000 of the time on our side.
So. I like it's going to be quick.
Huh?
It's going to be quick.
Yeah.
Because they were waiting to be on the agenda here, then we would be hitting them a late fee on the late fees.
Yes.
Is that
except
right?
Except for those late fees were like months ago.
They were May and June.
They were May and June's late
but we waived, fees.
But they never paid those.
But we
so
waived May already.
Balance.
So it would have just been June's.
No, we never waived those.
We never did waive May.
We never waived May or June's. We waived July's because they asked to be on the agenda. So they got a late fee because they had a balance of $40 on all their accounts. So that's why it showed that they had a balance and it wasn't a late fee. We don't do late fees on late fees, but because the balance was $40, the computer didn't know that it was a late fee. Does that make sense?
I hear what you're saying, but that is doing a late fee on the late fee.
Right, it is. That's why we reversed it. Because it, essentially they should have...
I hear what you're saying. I get it.
Yeah, it's kind of confusing.
I get it.
Because of the way that it's set up. So kind of outline it there to show you. So if you have a running balance, the computer's not going to pick that up. Like, it'll say $20. We're not going to put a late fee on a $20 account if you've got $20 on there. The computer will know that. But because you kept running that balance, it did not know that. Because you had a balance after your current billings were paid. Because you were not paying the full balance.
I understand what you're saying. It's just that balance was a late fee. That's the point I'm making. Is the balance
well, I understand that too, but I want you to understand why.
I totally get it.
All right, we're going to be at an impasse here until Brock's here, because I think the vote's going to be neutral. So we'll have to table you guys till the next meeting.
But the problem is, with what I'm seeing here, correct me if I'm wrong though, if they wait and don't pay anything, because
well, there's a zero balance right now. They've already
paid
the late fees.
You're asking for a reimbursement.
Yes.
Or a credit.
Yes.
Whatever. Yeah. Tomato, tomato.
I don't know. The last thing was a tomato or tomato too, so there you go.
Okay. I just want to make sure if we table it, that they don't get hit again while we're trying to decide
right.
what to do. But as of now, your accounts are zeroed.
Yes. All of them. They're all at zero.
Okay.
Because we
not just on your side, but on our side.
On our side,
yeah. Because
yes.
we paid
they're
that extra.
They're all at zero.
Okay.
Because we paid that extra balance on the 29th.
That's why I'm asking because we got
yeah.
a week.
As
Maryland,
of right
we,
now,
we've got
not gotten their new payments. So as long as the payment's been put on there, the next billing cycle. If it, as long as it's paid by the 28th, they're good.
They're gonna walk a check right over here. So
for their August payment.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
Okay.
We're going to have to have Brock help us.
Appreciate it.
Sort that out.
Yeah.
Okay. Want any of this stuff?
Okay. I'm going to keep it.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
See if I see something here that changes my mind.
All right, Brett, update on wastewater treatment and progress report. Thank you, guys.
Brendan and myself met with DEQ the 2nd of August, I believe, sometime around in there. August 1st, apparently. One of our concerns was that our current permit has phosphorus and ammonia limits in it that we're supposed to be meeting right now. And so I approached them, I approached the state a year ago and asked them if we could get additional sampling data. And they granted that. And we were required to meet with them again so they could review the sampling data. And they believe that through notification, they originally thought that they could just approve the phosphorus and ammonia limit delay for a couple of years without having to go through public notice. But after our meeting, he confirmed with us that they had to go through public notice. So the state is going through public notice to extend our phosphorus and ammonia limits to a future date with certain milestones. And so that was a good thing for us. And then we started talking about the actual permit requirements, and I'll let Brendan kind of fill in the details on that.
So forward. Before we went to this meeting, one of the conditions was that we bring a work plan and a schedule and a sampling plan to explain to the various staff heads what the plan is so that they could agree to make a permit modification. That permit modification is what Brett was talking about, where they will suspend the ammonia and phosphorus limits right now. And so this is what we went through with the state. For you, it's a good overview of where we're going with the whole treatment plant expansion process. So I won't read this. I'll just highlight the big major headings here. There are two critical paths. One is to move forward with the preferred alternative, which has come before you, which is the LEMNA system. And also another parallel path that includes looking at groundwater discharge. We've also talked about that involves the rib area and potentially acquiring some additional land. One of those options was to go to the sovereign lands of the state and get a lease. That probably isn't going to pan out, but anyway, there's two parallel paths. So starting off, the first one, this is the critical path. We explained to the state that one of the basis and important step, first step, is to establish what it is we're going to serve. And that's been a process over a handful of years with applicants that are seeking annexation. Explained to them that the board has agreed to serve OPID. And we are in the process of getting into an interlocal agreement. And the purpose for that interlocal agreement, in part, is to establish the takedown schedule of treatment. So of the 3,200 units that are in an understanding to serve, what really is that schedule? What is it that OPID is seeking over the next 10 years, 20 years in terms of reservation and a reservation commitment by the parties to serve? And so that's basically where we're at, is in that process to establish that interlocal agreement with OPID. Does that make sense? without it, we don't really know what, we don't have a foundation to start from. The treatment expansion alternatives is going to be important for a number of reasons. To the state, it has a specific purpose, but to you, it's to show that we've gone through a number of considerations, and they're listed there. You'll probably recognize them. We've briefly looked at an activated sludge mechanical plant. That's fairly, that's your Cadillac most expensive option to, if you wanted to region-wise and suck in all of North Tooele County.
We could.
Alternative two is to improve the area of lagoons and with what we are running with as your preferred alternative, which is the proprietary Lemnis system that adds biologic capacity in your aeration system. It also adds a polishing reactor for nitrification and also a phosphorus removal process. In addition to that, there's some headworks things we need to do and also some disinfection we need to increase capacity. But that is, in a nutshell, your alternative two. Alternative three, we looked briefly at constructed wetlands. You may recall we hired a sub-consultant bar. They were experts in calculating wetlands treatment capacities. That did not work out how we had hoped. Alternative four is lagoon expansion, basically just full containment. That was a nightmare because that your percolation rate was
nothing.
So small it just ballooned into something laughable. And number five, groundwater discharge, which is still a feasible alternative, but it's a parallel path. Impact fee facilities plan, that's in progress. In order to complete that, we'll need to finalize an interlocal agreement with OPID and understand and have what basically have a mutual agreement of the schedule, the growth rate, the service areas. We've received OPID's current master plan, and we have great data to pull out of that. We just need to put together our version of how we see that, and then come together and finalize an impact fee facilities plan, cost estimates, and all that thing. That's in progress right now. Following that will be your impact fee rate analysis, which you know the process, we've been through that with both the water and the sewer collection system. It is a separate process and it requires public hearing. Then we get to OPID's capital recovery cost and schedule and agreement. This is a separate agreement that identifies the actual amount that SPID will be due annually for the reservation of that capacity in the treatment system. This is was described most recently in principle in the letter that went out to Lake Pointe County and OPIC, that it would be based on a wholesale treatment style agreement. So you're going to not wholesale water, but you're going to wholesale treatment. So you lower your risk in collecting and generating revenue by only working with another public entity who will levy their own impact fees, collect their own rates, and then guarantee an annual payment to you, SPID.
What does that do with, I think I already know the answer to this, but just in case I'm not smart enough to understand it, what does that do to any of the maws and paws that just kind of along the way, all of a sudden we bring a sewer line along them? They can still just come along if they want to now? Or do they, or does that exclude them now?
So,
if it's along the alignment of an existing sewer line?
Well, not existing, because we just put it in. And now we've got
this. If we put it in?
Yeah, or just now, let's just say Open puts in a new line, and it, now it's adjacent to somebody's property, but they're not part of the development. It's just the line now makes it and hooks into our system, but now it goes along somebody's property, and they've got 10 acres, and like, hey, we've got property, we've always lived here, but we want to, we've had a septic tank, and we want to now hook into your system.
I can give you a simplified answer. Probably not this simple in reality, but the simple answer is OPIT's trunk line comes down, Erta, comes down 1200 West. Because that's outside of SPID's boundary, the easiest way to handle that is for those entities to annex to OPID and pay OPID the impact fee and become ratepayers.
It's outside of both districts' boundaries, so.
And then that gets collected and managed under OPID's structure.
But does that?
And then they absorb that into their takedown schedule. So if they want
does that,
1,000 units.
Does that start to take away from their ERUs though?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right.
But okay. They're not, and back to what Brandon was saying, it's not that simple, but if it's not in our district, we don't have to serve them. Very similar to what OPID has, it's not in their district, they don't have to serve them either. So it's the same thing. It's like, well, you're 4 miles that way. We may pass you with our trunk line, but you're not in our service area. You're not within our district. They have a district very similar to our district. We don't have to go way out west and take somebody in.
So if they're connecting to OPID's trunk line, it's OPID's trunk line.
Yeah.
So
it eats away at their ERU.
It really is out of SPID's purview, so to speak, because they're not going to pay impact fees to SPID to connect to that line. If they were to connect to one of SPID's lines, then they would request annexation in SPID. Now, it may not be, what's that?
They would pay for the treatment at the sewer.
They would pay you an impact fee or a rate
for treatment.
They would pay you for treatment. Would pay you for treatment.
You meaning OPID?
OPID. Then OPID would collect that money, and that would come to SPID in the annual fee.
Okay.
So you would manage, when I say
you, SPID's got it, yes.
Would manage all of their own internal service area impact fees, rates, taxes, however they so choose to, just like you do, mm-hmm. They would manage their own service area. The only difference is that they would collect enough money to make that annual payment from their customers to make SPID's annual payment.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So are there variances on that? Sure. You could have a small 20-lot subdivision just adjacent to your border, and you could choose to annex them in directly into the district, okay. So on and so forth. So.
But I thought, based on the contemplated agreement, we're only dealing with
entity.
Other public entities, more private developers outside
right.
of our existing boundaries.
No, I'm saying it. The board can do whatever you have the ability to do whatever you want. If you want to do a one-off, we're trying to avoid that. That's your decision. But right now, the policy that has been sent out to all of the public entities throughout the county is that you will not do that unless it comes to you as a public through a public entity.
Thanks. Makes sense.
Okay, then we have the treatment plant design.
Kennecott's property is in our boundary?
No. So the next step in this process is to actually get the design going. So instead of reading this, I'm just going to run down. There's an exhibit here that went in a work plan. This just shows the core processes. You've got your headworks over there in blue. It's got some pump enhancements, replacing pump motors and probably force main. This is the biological treatment area. That would be basically taken out and put, replaced with the Lemnis system. It's got a baffle in two areas of different concentrations of aeration. This over here, right in this area, is the polishing reactor. It's got media in it, and it also has air, and is the polishing element for the nitrogen removal. And then in this corner of this cell 3B is the flocculation zone for phosphorus removal with the construction of a new building and some tanks, some chemical tanks, and some aeration there. And so this right here is primarily the heart of the upgrade, which is the Lemna product. And then the last part there is disinfection. There's another contact chamber that needs to be constructed, and probably some upgrades on pumps to increase the concentration of hydrochloric solution. That summarizes the treatment process. Funding options, we talked to the state about the SRF program and the likelihood that SPID can come to them and get at least consideration for a low interest loan. They indicated that there's one opportunity a year to submit an application. That is later next year. That hopefully will be midway through the design process to know enough to submit a complete application. They felt that would be sufficient. What they really want to see is that alternatives analysis with rough cost estimates so that they can have something to act on. They don't need a full design. So that will go to the state and run parallel to the design process. The other component, if you do get state funding, they'll likely be federal funds. You don't have to go through the NEPA process, which is just another clearinghouse process. It just takes time to send out letters and get clearances. There's a period where you will need to prepare to issue bonds and go through that legal process and all that. That happens at the end of your bidding process, or somewhere in the middle where you know what costs. You've got projects bid and you know what you need to go bond for. You've got your funding basically agreed to from the state, and so you have this last component that you have to go out and borrow money. And that's kind of tied up with this bidding process, and then of course the construction process. The parallel process is to go through the groundwater discharge permit process. We've been through several months with the groundwater division with a prior groundwater discharge permit application. They've come back with several comments. Basically, the heavy lifting on this entails drilling three test wells and taking at least at a bare minimum 12 months of sampling to establish a baseline of the groundwater so that they can determine see if it's feasible to discharge to the ground so that you're not discharging with higher concentrations than the groundwater contains. So that, just by nature of the sampling process, takes quite a while. And then in addition to that, there's reporting and review processes. And so that's probably a two-year process, 18-month process at minimum from where we stand today. And then finally, there's the effluent testing reporting. The state wants to see how we're doing and make sure things are okay during the period of this permit modification. We're committed to provide annual reporting to them, and that's just a set of process. So what does that look like on a calendar? You just run this through and then I'll be done. So it's essentially a three-year process. The interlocal agreement here with OPID is scheduled to, by the way, the state's agreed to this schedule and is in the process of finalizing the permit modification to incorporate this schedule for the duration of this three-year period. So the interlocal agreement, we're hoping to get done by your October board meeting. This is a pretty aggressive schedule, by the way, so some of these things may carry over and run concurrently with other processes, but this is the goal. So mid-October to get an interlocal agreement. Again, this is the interlocal agreement, it's not the takedown schedule or the money part. Treatment expansion alternatives also to get done by the 1st of November. That's largely done. It's a matter of compiling all the information, putting it in on a cover page so that it's sufficient for you when the time comes to go to the state for funding requests. And we can bring that to the board any time before that, just so you're aware and can see what that includes. But you've seen most of the stuff in board meetings. Impact fee and rate analysis, that's going to follow on the heels of the impact fee facilities plan in November and run again a month and a half. That's pretty aggressive for them, but it is what it is. Right after that point, that's when we'll be ready to go and get into an open capital recovery cost agreement, because we'll know the distribution of costs, all the money, we'll understand what the capital requirements are, and that's the time when you get into the discussion with OPID and get into an agreement and get that established. Then the treatment plant can run basically concurrently right after the impact fee facilities plan is done and your impact fee analysis is done. You know exactly what you got to do, what the costs are, what the distribution is, and then we can commence the design. The design runs for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 months. Give them the DEQ a quick month and a half to review it, which they probably won't get done. That carries over into year two. We'll get comments back from them and have a month to respond, and then give them another month and a half to get us a permit.
Brendan, can I ask a question? Yeah. Does this correspond to the DWQ's timelines that they listed?
It does very loosely. The state's given us a little bit of slack in the time frame, so they've extended this schedule just a bit.
So in order to extend the timeline on the phosphorus and ammonia, they're putting these not constraints but milestones that such and such has to be completed by this date and then this date, and it's not necessarily that it's cast in stone. They have the ability to modify or extend based on circumstances. Like if we're up against a hard roadblock, we simply just need to explain what it is and why. And but so all of these things that Brendan is talking about is in this permit extension per se.
So the funding, you can see, just shortly after the design process begins, the funding process starts to get everything together. There's a submittal for the in May.
May 1st is the deadline to get that application.
So about midway, a little bit more than midway past the design is when that application goes in, and then the state takes a while.
Speaking of funding, did you see Twilla got like $2 million in grants for like generators and stuff for their wells?
Good.
Yeah. I don't know how they got that. But.
So the treatment plan is proposed to be online in 3 years from now, roughly, give or take.
So just coming down here, the important stuff is the city, I guess. Then you got the NEMA process that started in the previous year. That has to clear. The review process has to clear. That's the environmental process. This is your bidding process.
Basically 2 months of bidding, 1 month of reviewing and awarding has to come before the board.
And then open bids and award the project, and then in February of year two, begin the construction process for a year, and that rolls into the next year. And basically ends in February of the following third year. You can see that we've proposed to the state that we need at least 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
They gave us 10, 11. They gave us basically 11 months of contingency to deal with contingencies. The parallel process, I won't go through that because it's a little more uncertain, but is to parallel that with the groundwater discharge permit application to see where that leads.
I will comment on sovereign lands. They rejected the ability for us to fence that property, so that's out of that's not going to happen.
More questions?
Okay.
No, it's great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Let's see here. Item number four. Discuss Utah Code 10-9A-508.1, private maintenance of public access amenities prohibited.
So this came to my attention through Ward Engineering, who was working with a private developer, and based on their opinion, they were saying that storm drainage facilities cannot be maintained by an HOA according to this law. So that may affect us. So I reached out to Brent Rose to have him take a look at it and to give us his opinion on it. And he responded today in an email that he says, as I read it, generally would not only apply to SPID with respect to its water utility, serving customers within SPID boundaries of a city. It is my opinion that storm drainage facilities, detention basins, would not be included within the definition of a water utility, as a term is defined in the statute. I interpret sewer in this section to mean sanitary sewer, not storm drainage. Therefore, the statute would not be applicable to SPID. Finally, if the statute ever is interpreted to apply to storm drainage facilities, and again, this would only apply pertaining to facilities within the boundaries of a city under that section, an HOA could nevertheless enter into a contract to maintain and be responsible for detention basins in perpetuity. The purpose of the statute, as I see it, is to prevent cities from forcing private entities to take on maintenance and responsibility for public facilities. So, as per the definition, it applies to water and sewer, not storm drainage. So I think, we're good. According to his opinion, I don't think we have any concerns with continuing to require an HOA to maintain storm drain detention basins that have playgrounds and things associated with them.
Okay. So.
All right, item number five, consider and approve resolution 2025-8, establishing the district's policy pertaining to deed conveyance of real estate property.
So there was a new statute that was approved by legislature effective May 7th of 2025 that said that public entities receiving any property that we actually have a signature block on the deed conveying the property, meaning that we we acknowledge that we're accepting it. And so he's drafted that resolution for the adoption by the board. If you have any questions, further questions, we can chat about it. Otherwise, we can make a motion to approve it.
I think that probably makes sense. I'll entertain a motion.
I motion to approve Resolution 2025-8, establishing the district's policy pertaining to deed conveyance for real estate property.
I'll second that. All in favor?
Aye.
All right, item number 6, approve minutes from July 15th, 2025.
I don't have any comments.
Yeah, I don't either.
I motion to approve the meeting minutes of July 15th, 2025.
I'll second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Manager's report, Brett.
There is a fee that is proposed from the Division of Drinking Water because of lack of federal funding that is being cut by the current administration. And they are proposing to charge almost 3 cents per 1,000 gallons for domestic water being used. They estimate, based on average, this would be $4.59 per connection per year. So I ran our calculation, and our usage is double. Our fee would be double. So if I go off the state, our annual fee would be, if this gets approved in its current form, our fee, based on average, would be $20,000 a year. But based on their calculation method using 2024 water usage data from SPID, we'd be paying double that, $40,000. I attended an informal meeting yesterday with Division of Drinking Water where they presented this information. And there were probably 15 to 20 people in attendance from anywhere from Provo to Farmington to Ogden. And the things that are exempt from this is secondary irrigation water. And so, for instance, people on Settlement Canyon Water in Twilla, they would not be charged, those homeowners that are using Settlement Canyon Water to irrigate, they're only being assessed indoor water usage, okay? But because we are using drinking water to irrigate, mm-hmm. we don't have a secondary irrigation system, it's almost like we're getting hit hard.
Right.
Well, it's not almost, we are.
Right, right.
So I asked for some sort of variance to be considered for those of us that are using drinking water to irrigate turf. And when I sat down, both Provo and the other cities up north also indicated that they were in the same scenario. And they also indicated that their rates were double, if not more than double, what the state had advertised. And so I don't know where that's going to end at, but that's kind of a starting of the public comment period.
How long does that last?
The next meeting will be on September 15th. No, not September. The formal comment period. The formal comment period is in September. I need to get the final date.
Okay. So it's you got a few weeks still before that.
Yeah. So on a side note, one of the people that represented the city made an interesting comment that they did a study on pre-COVID construction projects on an 8-inch water line versus current pricing today, at a 459% increase.
That's insane.
And that's what we saw with our stuff, with our scene, with our costs of construction.
Yeah.
A lot of pushback was given by other municipalities by saying that we're just trying to keep up with
current costs
and operation and maintenance. However, from the Division of Drinking Water side, they're the only entity in the state of Utah that is not fee-based. Division of Water Rights assesses fees, water quality assesses fees. Senate Bill 80, which was recently passed, now allows the Division of Drinking Water to assess fees. So that's where things are at there. So
okay.
We'll hear more about that as things move forward.
Okay.
The state parks, they were able to repair their water leak.
Oh, good.
They had bolts rusted out, which pushed the follower and the gasket from the fitting. And so they were able to chip some concrete off of some of the bolts and put new bolts in, put the gasket back in, the follower tightened back up to fix that portion of the leak. And they had to go on the lake side of the railroad track and replace 12-foot section of pipe. Bacteria tests were taken after chlorination and flushing, and the water has been restored, so all things were good there.
Did we have to replace our meter? Did we have a meter that was reading wonky today? Did we end up replacing
We ended up replacing the dials on it.
And now it appears to be reading accurately now.
Yes.
Okay.
So that's all I have on the national report.
Thank you. Financials and warrants. You ready for that?
I motion to approve the financials and warrants dated August 19th, 2025 for the total of $86,743.01.
I'll second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Have any communication petitions, public comments that we need to add into this?
Other than this public water system fee, I don't have anything else.
Okay, motion that we adjourn.
Second that.
Favor, aye.
Meeting is adjourned at 5:03 p.m.